Muffler Man's cousin.
Muffler Man.
All right, let's start this thing.
Related to the Muffin Man.
Yeah. Oh, we turned our camera and we know way too much about what the neighbors are up to now.
Oh, that's too bad.
Let's intro this thing. Hey, listeners, you're listening to another exciting episode of Chewing the Scenery Horror Movie Podcast. This is a podcast where we friends get together and talk about a horror movie, which we will spoil, but first, we'll talk about Recently Watched, which we're going to just totally spoil that too. We thank the Moonrays for giving us that song, Intro Creature Features, at the top of the show. You can find the music on Amazon or Apple Music, where you could buy it digitally, or say hello to them on Facebook, where they are the Moon-Rays. And we are not professional critics. We're your hosts. I'm Richard. I'm here with Will.
Hello.
And Jolien.
Welcome.
And probably some barking dogs and some neighbors with loud mufflers.
All right. We welcome them too.
By mufflers, we mean tailpipes, not things you wrap around your neck.
Yes.
Unless you're Isadora Duncan. Then there's a little bit
of bulb
bit,
there.
A bit too wrapped.
Too soon?
Too soon. Okay. Too soon.
Guys, recently...
Imagine if she could be in a Marvel movie today.
You know what?
If not for that tragic accident.
I grew up with a picture of her hanging on the wall. A portrait of Isadora Duncan.
She was hanging on the wall?
By her
like
muffler.
Like a cat? Like she jumped up on the wall?
Yeah. So,
That's why they make breakaway mufflers now.
Yeah.
So when your actress jumps the fence and she gets her muffler caught, it won't strangle her.
What do you do when your horror punk singer jumps the shark?
I don't know.
We'll find out next episode.
Oh, good.
So, guys, who wants to start it?
I can't remember anything I've watched recently because it's all been crap.
Oh, okay.
A lot of stuff on Tubi.
How do you like their new logo? Trubi?
I don't like their new logo at all. I don't know why they did it.
That T kind of looks like it's trying to be an R.
Yeah.
Trubi.
The purple's all right, but I don't like the font. Yeah, I watched a bunch of crap late 80s, early 90s low-budget action films, but I couldn't tell you if one of them was good because none of them were, so I didn't write it down. I look for, like, one good fight scene and one good car explosion, wrecking explosion, but nothing I watched was very good.
Fair enough. Jolien?
I think Tubi's got a big head now that New York Times has done a glowing review of them.
Oh, yeah, I was afraid of that. I was afraid that would happen one day.
All right. Well, I watched, we are going to talk about him next week, but I watched Thanksgiving.
Oh.
Directed by Eli Roth.
Yes.
Came out last year. Did you watch this one?
I've not watched this one.
It's an enjoyable slasher.
Oh, okay.
You guess the killer pretty quick. Something about the editing and coverage, the impact was... off. Didn't really land on the kills. The practical effects are good and stuff, but
what was it, the timing?
Yeah, there's something about it, it's just off. It's like you're just seeing too little too late. We enjoyed the Massachusetts accents. Ends on a Danzig song.
Oh
wow.
Gina Gershon's in it.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it was like, felt like a promising debut from a new director rather than an 8th feature, but yeah, it was all right. It was enjoyable. Watched Of Mice and Men from 1939.
That's a good one.
Directed by Lewis Milestone. Lon Chaney Jr. as Lenny and Burgess Meredith as George. You seen that one?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's brutal. It's quite shocking.
It's been a while since I've seen that one. I've
seen that one in the Gary Sinise and...
John Malkovich.
Yeah. That one's pretty good, too.
They're just putting a trigger warning that films about the Great Depression can be downbeat.
It could be depressing.
Yeah. Wait till they turn it into a musical, an upbeat musical. We're gonna pet the rabbits.
What, Trog from 1970 again?
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Freddie Francis. Stars Joan Crawford in her final movie. Michael Goff. It's got footage from The Animal World from 1956. And one of the reporters is played by David Warbeck.
Mm-hmm.
10 years before is in The Beyond.
Hmm.
The Beyond.
All right. I watched. Oh, yes. So we watched these movies we're going to talk about as a special. We watched The Laughing Woman, which is an Italian movie, 1969, Piero Civazappa. You got Dagmar Lassander, who plays Mary. She was in Iguana with the Tongue of Fire and House by the Cemetery. She gets roofied by a boss, Dr. Sayer, and wakes up in his villa, which is state-of-the-art Italian chic. There ensues a series of erotic power games, and it appears to be veering towards a case of Stockholm Syndrome, but there's many a twist to come.
Oh, good.
Hmm.
Great score by Stelvio Cipriani. Similar setup to Blind Beast from the same year, including a huge sculpture of a woman's body, but ultimately more sex positive than morbid. The Devil's Lover from 1972, written and directed by Paolo Lombardo. This one's for Rosalba Neri completists only, I'm afraid. She's one of three women who go to a castle because they heard the devil lives there.
Yes, you would.
She faints and wakes up as her ancestor back in the good old witch-burning days. Although I spotted an apartment block and a passing motor coach.
Oh, it was an old apartment block.
This film's so impoverished, when they need an outdoors night scene, characters just declare it's dark.
Oh, boy.
Srigala, from 1981. This is an Indonesian sort of slasher movie, kind of. From the director of Satan's Slave. Three treasure hunters are diving in the lake when a couple of babes turn up, but unknown to them all, there's a masked killer. After the opening where another treasure seeker is gutted, there's a long stretch of swimming, frolicking, and a bit of kung fu. And the
well, it's underwater. It looks like Tai Chi, but it's actually just regular kung fu.
And the killer smashes their boat after a chase, but the boat's fine the next day.
It's a self-healing boat.
Yeah. So anyway, that was it.
Wow. Let's see. I should probably start with the thing we watched more recently. We watched American Fiction, which I had no idea was up for Oscars. I hadn't heard of
Never heard of it.
Yeah, hadn't heard much about it and maybe hadn't heard of it at all. And it's, it's Jeffrey Wright, who I think is a terrific actor and seems like a really cool dude outside of what he plays on screen. He plays Thelonious Ellison, nicknamed Monk.
Mm.
Wink, wink. He is a very intelligent African-American professor and author. Mm-hmm. His books are critically acclaimed, academically acclaimed, but they don't sell very well.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just as a joke writes a very stereotypical black novel. And of course, as you might expect,
it's a hit.
It's a big hit. And it follows kind of his personal journey as he goes back to see his family, his sister and his mother, who is showing signs of Alzheimer's coming on, and his loser brother who comes to visit and really doesn't help, doesn't contribute much. And it's kind of his story as to what happens with these characters and this nice woman across the street and his adventure in being a very, very popular author who can't really reveal who he really is because he's not the nom de plume that he is using. He's a really smart guy who has not been to prison and possibly murdered somebody. So that one was good.
That happened to my one of my writing, creative writing professors
really?
In college. He wrote a sci-fi novel in a weekend and published it, and it was the best thing, the best-selling thing he'd written.
Oh,
he had
wow.
like 8 novels under his belt, and not all of those combined hadn't sold like half of what he sold on this sci-fi novel, which I thought was really good. And I wish I could remember the title of it.
Did he decide it was just going to be trash and he was just going to knock it out?
Yeah, basically. He
wow.
was like, he set himself a goal of, I have, you know, 48 hours or whatever, 24 hours to write it.
Yeah. Didn't Elton John write Yellow Brick Road in like 10 minutes or something?
Maybe.
The song, not the whole album.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think people maybe, maybe when they do that, they let part of their creative genius out.
Yeah.
You know, even if they're being a little condescending about it at first, maybe it just sort of unleashes the beast.
I remember in the book they had naked clothes where they took a photo of your body naked and put it on the front of your clothes. And they had a $10,000 bill with Ronald Reagan's face on it.
Nice.
Yeah.
So has that ever happened to you guys? You've rushed out something and it's gone really well?
I wrote an art history paper in college drunk, and I did better than I had on any others.
Real drunk history.
Like, I went over to my friends. I could not write it. And I had a couple shots of tequila and then wandered back to the computer lab. I was pretty smashed by the time I got back there. I don't remember what I wrote. But I turned it in and I got like an A- on it. I think the highest I'd had was a B before.
Wow.
Like, wow, I need to drink more. At least when I'm writing art history papers.
I would say the one time where I was being fraudulent and did a good job of it was on behalf of a friend in college who was a very good painter. And he just didn't have it in him at the time to paint something that he wasn't inspired to paint. He's just like, man, I can't. He had a family member, like some aunt or uncle, that wanted a painting of their favorite boardwalk into the ocean somewhere in California or who knows, East Coast, whatever.
Yeah.
It was just one of those, you know, where it's so stereotypical. And they're like, we want your style, your painting. And he's just like, dude, I'll give you half the money if you paint it.
Oh.
And I said, okay, I'll paint it. And he gave me a couple of photographs. And I just said, oh, what kind of brush marks does Sean make? What kind of color palette does he use? And I just kind of faked it for him. And he just turned it over and got the whatever it was, couple $100. I don't know. It was the 90s. We needed the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I did that. There's been a couple times where I had to do a podcast and, you know, think of stuff to say without much inspiration.
Yeah.
You've probably done that before.
Yeah, a few of them.
Yeah. So
sometimes I've even watched the movie.
Yeah, I hear that helps you fake it. Let's see. I also watched a documentary called Memory, The Origins of Alien. This is a 2019 documentary talking about the origins of the 1979 film Alien. This is directed and written by Alexandre O'Philippe and produced by Carrie Dignan-Roy. Anyway, it's some...
Sound like some alien names to me.
Yeah, they do, don't they? It's funny because they talk about the connections to H.P. Lovecraft, to Francis Bacon, to the Greek Furies. You get to meet cast members and see how much they've aged or are not currently alive. And
you met them too.
It's just an empty chair. Harry Dean Stanton.
Not much to
currently
say.
Currently not alive.
Right. But they have interviews with Tom Skerritt, Veronica Cartwright, Roger Corman, Ben Mankiewicz.
Roger Corman's best movie?
Well, I forget what the connection was. Was it that Oh, jeez. I'm just trying to think of who did he bring into the business. So that
James Cameron did special effects with Corman Studios.
That must be what it was.
Yeah,
talking about aliens. Like, I saw it in him first. I brought him up.
Somehow Roger Corman got involved in this interview just so he could take that money and finance another film.
During which he would make another film.
They were like, do you have something to do with Alien? Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot. A whole lot. Yeah.
I mean, it would be
all the walking scenes.
It would be better than the Kevin Bacon game, The 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, because Roger Corman brought so many people up in the business.
Yeah.
And just gave him a start. He's just like, yeah, fake it till you make it. Go ahead. So, yeah, this one's worth a look. I believe it was on Tubi, which now looks like Trubi because of the dumb font. And also on Tubi, I watched Body Shockers, the first season, and then into probably two episodes into the second season. This is, I think they added to the name for the next, you say series in the UK, yeah.
Yes.
You don't say season.
I think we've adopted season now.
Oh, really?
I think we've adopted series.
We've traded.
So we've just switched.
I think we use series for like the whole thing.
Okay.
And then season for the year by year.
Okay.
Yeah, that's typically how it works here now.
Well, this one
has been.
This will now be known as Body Shockers, Nips, Tucks, and Tattoos. This is a Channel 4 documentary series fronted by Katie Piper, who was attacked with acid by an ex-boyfriend and his accomplice, who I found out just did a little digging to see what happened here. Well, who could guess the motives of somebody who would do a thing like that? But this guy and his accomplice are doing life sentences now for what they did to her. She's still pretty. She just has been burned. And she hosts this show, and kind of the focus of it is usually to meet somebody who has already done something noticeable to their body, their face, what have you, whether it's earlobe stretches or, you know, face tattoos or whatever body modifications you got. They meet somebody who's going to go do something and then actually introduces them to see if one can be influenced by the other. Usually not. Usually they go, nope, I want to stretch my earlobes and get a giant tattoo.
I want an alligator to bite my face off.
Right.
Look badass.
I want fangs so I could bite alligators' faces off.
Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. The episodes are about 48 minutes, so it makes an hour of television if you had commercials.
Yeah.
So one of those kind of deals. Definitely worth a look if you like kind of, you know, watching this sort of thing. There are some episodes where maybe if you're a little squeamish, you don't want to watch.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, but you do get to see people who've had
not squeamish, so.
The stretched earlobes that have snapped. They're having them repaired, or just they're sick of having them and they just have them shortened back up to normal lobes.
Hmm.
I totally knew when I started seeing this stuff that this was going to be like big money for for ear surgeons.
See you in 10 years, buddy.
Yeah.
So that's what I've watched. And, you know, most of this I would say, yeah, go ahead and watch it. Jolien, you chose Attack of the Beast Creatures.
Yes.
All right.
AKA Hell Island.
Also known as Hell Island, yes. Had you both seen this before?
I have not seen this before.
I had not either, so
I was unaware of it.
Totally unaware of it. I thought, oh, Jolien must know this from back in the day. No?
No, I read about it in Psychotronic years ago.
That was my idea. It was like, this is something you found recently that you heard about years ago.
Yeah, so it's been like in my mind always, like a movie about a bunch of Zuni dolls attacking people. Yeah.
I was about to ask, does anyone else think someone was sitting there watching
Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah, Trilogy of Terror, and going, you know what? What if there was a bunch of them and it was on an island? Wouldn't that be cool?
And it was.
And it was, yeah.
Essentially, yeah. Do you want to give us the rundown of the plot? I think I just might have said it out loud.
This movie was filmed in 1983 and then not released.
Wonder why.
Eventually came out on VHS in 1985. Directed and produced by Michael Stanley. Any mm-hmm. relation to Paul Stanley?
I thought it was going to be relation to Richard Stanley, but...
Okay. Well, it's a very uncommon name, so they're probably all related.
Right.
Screenplay by Robert Hutton. Psychotronic says, this is my favorite movie from Connecticut since Horror of Party Beach.
Ooh.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Controversial.
Yeah.
Which, if listeners are longtime listeners, they'll remember that I thought that was a parody of a 60s indie beach flick, and it was actually authentic. I thought, man, they made this thing look pretty good.
It was a good one.
Yeah.
All right.
Watched that recently.
This is built around the producer's idea of a man dissolving in an acid pool.
Hmm. Oh, okay.
So that was the germ of
the idea. Now we got to figure out how he gets there and what happens to the rest of the people.
Like that TV commercial where the woman walks up with a faucet and says, I want you to design a house around this.
So he's probably like, pondering it and then watching Trilogy of Terror one night. Eureka.
Yeah.
For another good acid pool movie, see Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Okay, yeah.
So survivors of a sunken ship called the Obelisk drift to an island inhabited by Zuni Muppets. Mr. Bruin is the injured guy left behind on the beach who gets picked to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
And one character says, in such a short time. That's their first reaction.
Yes.
Morgan annoys everyone every time he opens his mouth, but he eventually starts frothing and takes a dive into the acid. Because this island has got, you can't tell whether a pool is drinkable water or
acid.
Yeah.
Unless there's fish in it.
Right. Either look for fish or just stick your face in and find out.
Yeah. Either is or isn't.
Pat is the first one who takes a refreshing dip in the acid pool. Kathy is on watch when she sees luminous eyes surrounding their camp. I thought it was quite good.
That was good, yeah. And I thought the melting effect.
Yeah.
When Pat sticks his face in there, it was good and gory.
Yes.
And nice. It was, yeah.
But I like the way it's done with Kathy, where she's left to be on guard at night, and uh-huh. And she doesn't see the eyes appear, but every time she turns around, there's more of them. It's like the birds or something. I like Mrs. Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
Shame she dies at the pool.
Yeah.
Phil gets impaled by a stick and breaks part of it off. And a sailor named Quinn says he never knew what hit him, but he's still alive.
Yes.
And he's pulling this stick on
his, I think he knew.
Stomach. He doesn't die for several minutes.
I know. So that I think was you awful. Got a
pretty good idea about what's hit him. Speaking of Roger Corman, it's definitely Roger Corman's school of filmmaking.
Mm. Yep. Let's walk around.
Most of the runtime is people walking one way and then back the way they came. It looks more fun on paper than it is to watch, I found overall.
Yeah.
The attacks were fun to watch, though.
They were. Wow.
So, did they give themselves extra obstacles by saying, hey, let's have this set in the 20s? Or was that just the only way they could have people...
They must have had access to the costumes before they came up with that idea. Because I doubt it's the other way around.
I think it must have been.
Hey,
I have access to a bunch of old costumes.
Who's the chump that has to wear the white pants and look like they shit themselves? Did you guys notice that?
I noticed that right away.
It's like, dude, don't sit down in the mud. Oh, okay.
Don't wear white pants.
Yeah. Now you're shit pants guy for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Can I read you what Dread Central said about the attacks?
Oh, please.
So Dread Central is this website. They swarm on people like piranhas, but it still comes down to these dolls being attached to the clothing or obviously being held in place by the actor. While the actor's screaming like banshees and flailing about like overacting lunatics, when they start ripping the dolls off and throwing them about, it just becomes that much goofier. Words really cannot accurately describe just how ridiculous these attack scenes are. They're just an absurd orgy of total chaos with actors screaming and thrashing about with a bunch of toy dolls. You simply have to see it to believe it.
That's pretty close, yeah.
Well, they've never seen John Mickle Thor, have they?
Yeah, clearly they had.
Rock and what is that called? Rock and Roll Nightmare?
Rock and Roll Nightmare.
Yeah, where he's
first fighting starfish at first, and then a big puppet.
Yeah, rubber starfish followed by the rubber devil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he sells it. I really believe those were rubber starfish on his body.
And a devil puppet.
And a devil puppet. Totally sold the devil puppet.
I like those movies with the people get attacked with octopuses and stuff like that. And they have to like arrange the tentacles around themselves.
Yeah, like in...
Ah, it's killing me.
Like in the Ed Wood movie. Yeah,
Bride of the Monster.
Yeah. Well, the Tim Burton Ed Wood movie.
Yeah.
Where he has Johnny Depp as Ed Wood.
We forgot to steal the motor.
Yeah. Just shake it around. It'll look like he's killing you. Yeah, kind of like that. Yeah, there are people who thought Johnny Depp was just doing John Lovitz's liar character from Saturday Night Live, but apparently that's really kind of how Ed Wood talked. Kind of like John Lovitz's liar.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, Will, this was your first experience with it, as was mine. Do you immediately think of Trilogy of Terror?
Yes.
I guess, how would you not? But
do you like the way they run around with the little arms pumping?
Yeah.
Was great.
Well, was the deal that they had like a person in a giant one of those costumes? Or did they just...
They must have had some on tracks.
Because they articulated the arms pretty well for the running scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
kind of... I have no idea what they did there, but...
It was impressive. Yeah, because they were
They supposed to be real creatures or were they dolls?
Well, I think they were supposed to be real creatures, but if they were like if there was a crate of dolls that got reanimated by the acid water, that would have...
Tied it all together.
Or at least made some sense.
Yeah, they used the acid water as kind of batteries.
Ah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
To animate this.
Here we go, writing a better movie. We've done that more than once.
It's kind of a cargo cult thing.
I kind of like the amateur acting from the people in this movie.
Yeah.
Something about it, it seemed... Completely amateur, but at the same time, it fit somehow. I don't quite know how to explain it, but like...
Yeah, they all seemed to be into it.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the charm of it.
Like, they were given their all, hey, even guys, though they know this is...
Head out into the woods of Connecticut and make a killer doll movie.
Yeah, sure, why not? We'll do that this weekend.
So, is this being filmed in Stanford, Connecticut, does that make it a regional film?
Yep.
And being 84 minutes long, does that make it a perfect film? That it's under 90?
Makes it better.
Okay.
It's a plus.
Yeah, it's always a plus.
I mean, this could have been a short for how much walking around they did.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this could...
Yeah. And I thought, why would you cross the island in the middle? Why didn't you walk around the shore?
Yeah.
It'd be longer, but you probably wouldn't run into things that would kill you so easily.
Yeah. There could be wild boar.
Because they just arrive on this beach and they... declare it's an island. They have no idea 10 yards in either direction.
Yeah. And they're like, well, we'll go to the middle of the island. Like, yeah. Why?
They could have washed up in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Before they knew.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that the forest was obviously a temperate forest and not tropical in the least, but the dolls are supposed to be tropical looking.
How did Mystery Science Theater 3000 not cover this one?
I don't know. Maybe they just didn't have access to it. They couldn't get the rights or something.
Do they have to get the rights?
Yeah.
I guess they do.
Unless it's public domain.
Yeah, which they've done a few of those, haven't they?
Yeah. But there are several episodes they can't show on their channel because they no longer have the rights.
Oh, it was a limited time.
Mm-hmm. There's somebody, they covered a movie called The Final Sacrifice, which is a Canadian cult movie. And I guess the people who were in it got upset that they made fun of it, and they've pulled the rights to it. So it's one of the few episodes, though, that keeps getting pulled down on YouTube.
Oh.
Like most of the MST episodes are up on YouTube.
What a bunch of crybabies to just, you know, how do you appear in a movie, not know how bad it is, and then get upset when you find out it's bad.
Yeah.
by people making hilarious jokes about it, which most of the jokes are at least pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean, Manos, the people behind that kind of embraced it.
They were able to make a sequel. And
because everybody had forgotten about that movie.
Yeah.
They were kind of surprised when people started calling.
Manos, the Hands of Fate, which translates to Hands, the Hands of Fate.
Mm-hmm. I still can't decide if that's a, if it's a joke or if it was real.
The movie?
Yeah, like, was it made as a joke? I know the guy says it was made, he made it as a bet, and he couldn't make a movie, he had a bunch of film stock. But did he purposely make it bad, or was he just incompetent?
I think most people are incapable of making a good movie.
It's pretty hard to make a movie.
Like, I think if you gave a bunch of third graders a bunch of iPhones and said, okay, here's how this works, and then we're going to show you just a few tricks of editing in this software, you'd probably get some pretty cool stuff that they just filmed around the schoolyard. And
make it about some vampire brothel.
Yeah, exactly.
In the Old West?
Mm-hmm.
Which, as a third grader, is totally what I would have done.
Yeah.
But, you know, vampires in, vampires out. That's kind of how it works with a kid's brain.
Yep.
But, the release of this film, do you want me to read the Wikipedia rundown of this?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Okay. Although Beast Creatures was completed in 1983, it remained shelved for 2 years before it was picked up for distribution by Joseph Brenner, whose company, Joseph Brenner Associates, specialized in distributing independent and foreign films. Brenner had earlier distributed films such as the Hong Kong science... I can wait. It's probably the mail being delivered.
No, she was already here.
Oh, okay. So, I got nothing.
They didn't bark at all when she walked up.
No, it's just you guys who they've met hundreds of times.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Approximately 400 times for Luna. Where were we?
Joseph Brenner.
Brenner. Brenner had earlier distributed films such as the Hong Kong science fiction film Inframan from 1975.
Yes, that's good.
And the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre for a short time in 1977. The filmmakers had originally planned to release the film under the title Hell Island. However, Brenner, the film's distributor, felt that it was not catchy enough. After the filmmakers threw out the other suggestions for possible titles, which included Beast Creatures, before Brenner decided on Attack of the Beast Creatures as its title. It was released in the United States on VHS by World Video Pictures, Inc. I love that name. World Video Pictures. It's like, just... It really just gives you this grandiose notion of what it is they do, right? Let's see, on July 12th, 1985. It was released on VHS in West Germany by Rebel Video in 1988 under the alternative titles Beast Creatures and Hell Island. These copies of the film have long since been out of print and are considered extremely rare. Now... I want to just kind of do a little aside here. Because there's not a lot of something, does that make it rare or just, there ain't that many of them? I mean,
technically, yeah, that's rare.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But it doesn't mean it's valuable.
Okay, that's probably better. Yeah, that's more the question. Like, for example, they only made nickels with lots of silver in them during World War II in the United States.
Yeah.
They were like, we need nickel for those bullets, see? And so they said, well, what's not of much value? Silver, we'll use that.
Yeah.
So if you find those wartime nickels, they got a lot of silver in them. You can melt them down and kill a vampire.
Yeah, they were making pennies out of steel. What the hell?
What the hell was going on?
Yeah.
Well, they wanted copper jacketed bullets. Once again, yeah. It's all about the bullets. So those things are rare because they didn't make a lot of them. They didn't make them for that many years. Okay, yeah. Coins, rare. Stamps, rare. Crappy formats of crappy movies?
Yeah, it's rare now.
I guess rare.
Especially if that's the only way you can see the movie anymore.
Yeah, the world's an upside down place, isn't it? The film subsequently fell into obscurity, which Stanley would later attribute to the distributor Brenner's lack of promotion of the film, not the lack of quality.
No.
Or the lack of what the film scholars call goodness.
Goodness, yes.
So I read about this in Psychotronic Encyclopedia Volume 2, which was 1990, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
89, 90, something.
So, yeah, he must have got his hands on one of those rare videos.
Yeah.
From World Video Empire of
Crap.
Greatness.
But if you're if you're a psychotronic guy, I mean, everyone is going to be like, dude, I've got this.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so you probably get just showered with all kinds of crazy videos. Of course, in the early 90s, that was still the format.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Up until the late 90s, that was the format.
Yeah. So, unless you were into Laserdiscs. Which would just be kind of crazy.
Which clearly nobody was into because they're no longer around.
They're rare now.
They're rare, yes.
They're delaminating too. That is what I'm...
Probably.
That's what I'm hearing anyway. Let's see. In 2006, Stanley worked with a producer, Selinsky, to release the film for the first time on DVD, which was made available through order on the official website. For the film. So it has fallen out of commission as of 2020. But as we found out, it's on Tubi. So that's the basic rundown of it. The reception, as with many direct-to-video releases, as well as its general lack of availability, Attack of the Beast Creatures has largely been ignored by mainstream critics.
Oh, who could have guessed?
Yeah. Blockbuster Inc.'s Guide to Movies and Videos, and they don't want to be too snooty here because they don't even exist anymore. But
they're rare.
Yeah, they are rare. There's one left.
Just one left, yeah.
It's in Bend, Oregon, isn't it?
The last Blockbuster, I believe so. Yeah.
There were two left. The one in Alaska went out of business, and then I think the other one's in Bend.
I can't believe there's a subreddit for Blockbuster. People have... like good memories of Blockbuster.
Really?
Yeah, I don't.
Blockbuster is a shit store.
Yeah, now let's be clear about this. When you had a good hole-in-the-wall place and it shut down because it couldn't compete with Blockbuster and then you found your sorry ass going to Blockbuster, you weren't really stoked about the new carpet smell of the place.
No.
Which, is that in like spray format? Like,
I think it must be.
Because every one of those places smelled like... they just laid the carpets.
Yeah.
No matter how many years it had been there.
I went there once. And then I found out that they would cut films.
Yeah.
Without saying or telling the studio or anything. So, all right.
That's not going there anymore. Yeah. Yeah, that was kind of the same thing. It was, if you wanted something mainstream, maybe, but you weren't going to find any gems there that
no.
were... you know, some bizarre film like this.
Yeah, if you're a, you know, Mel Gibson fan, then it was fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And when they were always cutting out explicit sex scenes and gore, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do they ever cut out boring shit because it's boring? No.
No, that's what we should be railing against.
Yeah, you know what I find offensive?
All the boring scenes, cut those out.
All
just
the
leave the sex and gore. That's what I came for.
And the goddamn dialogue. Blah, blah, blah. Talkie, talkie, talkie.
So the Blockbuster cut of Attack of the Beast Creatures. Very rare.
Very rare.
Half an hour long.
They wash up on shore, and it's over.
They just walk and walk and walk.
They just wash up directly into the acid pool.
Yeah.
The end.
The end. Yeah, I never cared for Blockbuster.
The Psychotronic Video Guide's Michael Weldon found the film's cheesiness enjoyable, while also comparing the title monsters to the killer doll in the television film Trilogy of Terror. Well, you'd be blind not to see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, there we have it. Let's see. Although this has not been... okay, here we go. Legacy.
I don't think anyone from this did anything else, did they?
I doubt it.
Yeah, this says that Attack of the Beast Creatures Stanley only, it was his only directorial effort for several decades, who left the film industry to pursue a career in the theater.
Yeah, he did a documentary or something just a few years ago, didn't he?
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was.
I left for a career in the theater. I was forced from the movie market.
Let's see. It says he directed the occasional play, well, several plays, including the New York premiere of The Smoking Room.
And an off-Broadway version of The Beast Creatures.
Right. So this has gained a small cult following. Mm-hmm. Does it deserve it?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I think it had its amount of charm. It was so much better than the other movie we watched recently.
Yeah.
That, you know.
Yeah, they just seem enthusiastic about it. That's always
charming. Yeah, everybody seemed,
They're not trying to make a crap movie.
No,
and that's the worst thing somebody can do is say, oh, we're gonna be really cute and make a shitty movie.
Yeah.
No, just make it. It'll probably be shitty anyway.
Yeah, there's a good 80-something, 90-something percent chance that your movie's going to suck.
But if you're earnest about it, that's better for us, the audience.
Yeah, unless it's an earnest movie, in which case, please don't be earnest.
It's hard to make earnest movies since he's dead.
Someone pointed out that John Cena looks a lot like him with muscles. Holy shit.
Oh.
I want to see, like, Ernest goes to the gym.
Ernest gets swole.
Yeah. Ernest beats some asses.
Yeah.
Ernest in the haunted world.
Right. I don't know that we're going to make it to a full hour on this one.
This is the shortest episode ever.
We could pad it out with walking.
We could. We'll just walk around the studio for a while.
I could just dub in some footsteps here, and then we come back in 15 minutes and go, should we do the recommends?
What do you think we should do?
Okay, we know what did...
Something bit me. Don't stick your face in that water.
It was lacking quicksand.
It was lacking quicksand.
I would say if I were to give this movie some constructive criticism other than, hey, be good, don't suck, I would say acid, fine, but what about quicksand?
Acid quicksand.
Well, it kind of sticks to you.
Yeah, why not?
Another bit of advice is if you're going to use skeletons straight out of the lab, then try and disguise that.
The cut.
Yeah.
Top of the dome.
The cranium,
and all the little springs and hooks and everything holding them together. No.
Yeah. Put a hat on them or something.
Yeah, something. Some bloody rags on it.
Because it just tried my credulity.
It did. The rest of the movie I was fine with. I totally was on board. I believed every scene. But those fakey skeletons.
I like there's this whole bit where they climb up to the peak of the island and they see the tribe and they're worshipping this statue.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a nice touch. And then there's like several more minutes of them coming back down the mountain. But I like that statue, that whole, these creatures have got a culture and religion.
A belief system.
Yeah.
So they believe that if you kill them, something happens afterward.
Mm. Maybe.
Yeah. I think that's kind of cool. I was really hoping to see like telephone poles or distant freeways.
No.
I feel like they were just over the embankment of a freeway.
Yes.
I mean, it looked like that.
Like you could hear the cars.
Yeah. It really seemed like it. Like they washed up on shore and dragged their sorry asses over and sat down, and it's like, that looks like when you go over the edge of a freeway and all the big rocks right there. Yeah.
But I like that tiki god.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a plus.
I should just say tiki.
Yeah.
It's tiki.
It's in there.
The tiki god with his PIN number.
Yeah. He's using the ATM machine.
Yeah. With his PIN number.
Yeah. Redundancies. So So we know what worked. We know what didn't work. Too much walking.
Too much walking.
Skeletons that were obviously from a scientific warehouse.
Not using real Zuni dolls that killed people.
Well, yeah. I mean, the eye shine worked. The makeup for the acid burns actually looked pretty good.
Yeah, I thought the gore was pretty good on that.
Yeah, slap on a bunch of meaty looking stuff.
Yeah. Mm,
yummy.
Yeah, apparently it doesn't take much to get a good gore effect, which really makes you wonder why there's so many movies that have a budget and actual FX people.
That's what it was like in, you know, in the 70s up until they came up with all these new materials.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Friday the 13th came out, you know, up to that point, it was like, oh, nip down the butcher shop and throw that on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you basically had spirit gum, latex, and cotton, or actual guts.
And a team like Bird Eye Gordon and his wife doing the special effects, you know.
Or Night
Which is, as terrible as they are, I have to give them props that they put in all that effort for this crappy effects.
Yeah. Well, Night of Living Dead, you had Roger Corman.
Roger Corman.
Yes.
He's made every movie with John Carradine.
George Romero. You had George Romero like, we're going to use ping pong balls for eyes. Like, he was really married to that idea. And apparently it took a lot of effort to make those actually look like eyes because he put them in a skull, covered it with clay, and then did all the gory effects for the corpse that was found upstairs at the house.
Yeah.
And then he made the hand that sticks in through the window or the door or whatever and then gets hacked.
Yeah.
They filled it with Bosco.
Bosco filled hands.
Yeah. Modeling clay full of Bosco.
And that takes me back to junior high.
Yeah.
We love Bosco filled clay hands.
What is Bosco?
Chocolate sauce.
Oh.
Yeah. Basically like Hershey syrup, but more regional to the Northeast.
Yeah.
I think it made it through to the Midwest for a while, but
I think it came out before Hershey's, but
yeah,
I think it Quick, did. Nestle Quick.
Yeah. And I think they got the idea to make it powdered before Quick did.
Yeah. Well, I think Quick was only powdered and they were
both.
Both. And the liquid really took off, or the gooey crap.
Yeah. Of course, you know, Hitchcock used it in Psycho. So how bad could it be?
He used it a lot more than just Psycho. You could tell from his body.
He's like, fill me another glass.
Do we still have the Bosco account?
Right. Let's see. What I like in the Wikipedia page, it's like, see also Trilogy of Terror. Duh.
Trilogy of Terror 2.
Yeah.
2.
Poster art probably is not the original. Well, no, it says it is. Wow. The 1985 VHS cover art looks pretty good.
Yeah.
They probably blew a lot of budget on that.
I couldn't tell who it was, though, who did it.
Yeah. I mean, it...
I couldn't find it out.
It's a good rendering of the beast's face and then little ones, like, whirling around in the fiery sunset, it looks like. It's not Boris Vallejo.
No.
But it's someone who wants to be Boris Vallejo.
Ew.
I don't. I want to be Frazetta. Well, I want to be alive, but...
Yeah.
With Frazetta's style, not Vallejo.
I really like Boris Vallejo's stuff.
Well, some of it's a little too polished.
Yeah, I don't like... Now it just looks like people from the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've always felt like.
It looks really stiff, but yeah, you look at his 70s stuff, like this.
He was better.
Magazine covers and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, when it was just a bunch of like fully buff people who've been shaved and oiled, you know, then it wasn't as fun.
No.
Yeah, the art of making a poster tell something of the story really went away sometime in the 90s when they just went to the gaggle of faces format.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it's like, this big market now with, you know, custom posters for revivals and
Yeah.
You know, and what I do for Blu-ray covers and things, it's a whole bunch of people who'd rather be doing painted posters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's this guy called Tony Stella who does lots of stuff for Arrow and so on. He does beautiful stuff, and you're just like, wow, I wish they were still doing painted posters.
Oh, that'd be great.
It's like, oh, that's a Sonny Chiba movie? What if we just had Sonny Chiba's face and the other five people in it kind of a little smaller and sort of arranged?
Make it blue and orange.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, it started, I'm trying to think of what era that was that it...
It's 90s, really.
Yeah, it was before
photos
Scream.
Took over, and when once like things like Photoshop were common, it was just, we don't need an eyes now.
Yeah. Right.
Just slap faces on, and they're all, the face sizes are according to percentages based on popularity. And,
right.
You know, it's done by committee.
It's terrible. Yeah, I wish that would just go away. But yeah, the revivals and... You know, the box sets and everything are the hopefully the footing that we need to get this going again.
Yeah, like several boutique labels will do like limited editions, and they'll have a poster version of the commissioned cover.
Oh yeah, yeah. I've bought a couple of them, like Dog Soldiers, good example. You know, they had a special poster that went with the new. Cover art.
Right. Yeah, Graham Humphreys does a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Beautiful paintings.
In fact, I think I like the poster for Attack of the Beast Creatures better than the movie. But I had fun watching the movie. I got bored with some of the walking.
Right.
That's the worst of it.
Yeah.
If a bad movie, you know, is still fun... And the worst thing you can say is, it had too much walking in it.
Yeah.
It could be worse.
It could be made by Glenn Danzig.
You know what?
Oh, how long would this movie be?
It'd be an hour, an hour longer.
2.5 hour long cut of Death Rider. House of Pancakes.
Well, we should probably do the recommends. Who wants to start? Will?
Yeah, I'd recommend it if you've watched a lot of other things and you're out of things to watch.
But what about somebody who wants a campy thing that's regional and poorly made? And
yeah, no, that fits the bill.
Yeah.
You know.
Really needs to be a MST3K, but probably ain't going to happen.
Yeah, unless it's cheap to get. Yeah.
Right. Julian?
Yeah, watch it with some friends.
Yeah, that would be best, just to watch it with people.
Yeah, this reminds me of...
The cat didn't laugh once. Most of the time, he was asleep. The rest of the time, he was asking me, who's that? What's happening?
Yeah, this reminds me of, you know, friends and I used to watch, because we didn't have a lot of money and didn't have a lot of access to rentals, you know, we would get a hold of something and we'd watch the hell out of it for a weekend and then rent it again on some other weekend. I mean, we would watch something good like Reanimator, but then we would also watch like 976 Evil or The Power or something like that and have fun making fun of it.
Yeah.
Remember that guy sticks his hand in the garbage disposal?
Yeah.
Hand trauma. So this feels to me like something, you know, my idiot friends and I would watch back in the day.
Yeah.
And just find more and more funny things to make fun of. So yeah, I recommend it based on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you will get bored with the walking around. So that's really kind of it.
All right.
So should we call it a show?
It's a show. Yes. Let's get the hell out of here.
Can't wait for next time. We're going to talk about Death Rider in the House of Vampires.
Oh.
And maybe...
Stop saying that. I'm getting queasy. I think that's why I couldn't record last time, because I kept thinking about this movie and it was making me sick.
And then you watch the DVD extras or the Blu-ray extras and you get to hear Glenn Danzig actually talk.
Man.
Oh man, we'll talk about that next time. All right, listeners, thank you for listening.
Stay off Hell Island. Obviously.